Welcome to Native America Calling. I'm Brett Mabee. Native Americans make up a disproportionate percentage of state and federal prison populations. At the same time, their religious practices are disproportionately restricted by prison officials. Prison administrators used to Judeo-Christian rituals are not as accommodating with Native practices. Coming up, we'll hear from one program dedicated to advocating on Native inmates' behalf to expand access to spiritual and traditional practices. We'll talk about it right after the news.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Flags on Canadian government buildings across the country are flying at full mast for the first time in nearly 6 months. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, the flags were raised after talks with Indigenous leaders.
The flags were first lowered to honor the Native children who died and suffered at residential schools. That came after the remains of hundreds of Indigenous children were found at the sites of two of the former schools, one in British Columbia, the other in Saskatchewan. Raising the flags ahead of Remembrance Day has become a controversial issue. After talks with Native groups, the flags will be hoisted so they can be again lowered on Remembrance Day to honor those Canadians who died in wars. Mark Miller is the Crown Indigenous Relations Minister.
What we've heard loud and clear from all involved is that this is a responsibility of the federal government and not to put it on the, on the backs of Indigenous peoples who are already going through a lot these days. But there were a different and varying ranges of perspectives, some ranging from leave the flags down until everything is found and in the light of day and children returned home to their communities, and others saying that it was time now to lift them. But what we heard resoundingly in that, I mean, no one expected a consensus, was that this was a responsibility of the federal government to take a decision.
The National Chief of the Assembly of First Nations, Roseanne Archibald, had wanted the government to raise an orange Every Child Matters flag alongside the Canadian flag until, as she put it, all of our children are recovered, named, and physically or symbolically returned to their homelands. The plan now includes lowering the Canadian flags to half-mast every year on September the 30th, the National Day for Truth and Reconciliation. Ottawa says it's also working to find a suitable place to raise the survivor's flag. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Bills recently introduced in Congress aim to complete a long-awaited drinking water project for the White Mountain Apache tribe in Arizona. As Arizona Public Radio's Ryan Heinches reports, the reservation has lacked a dependable water supply for years.
The legislation would amend a federal water rights settlement with the White Mountain Apache tribe that was enacted by Congress in 2010. It would extend the timeline for the large-scale infrastructure project by 2 years and increase its funding from $11 million to $261 million. Cost overruns and unforeseen technical delays in the planning and design phases have hampered the White Mountain Apache Rural Water System and Minor Flat Dam. Tribal leaders say it's desperately needed to provide members with a clean and reliable source of drinking water that many communities on the Fort Apache Indian Reservation lack. According to officials, that's led to increases in public health risks, including COVID-19. The tribe had one of Arizona's highest rates of infection during the 2020 summer surge. The White Mountain Apache tribe is made up of about 13,500 people on the reservation located in eastern Arizona's White Mountains. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff.
The Air is Life Act is signed into law on the Navajo Nation to promote a smoke-free tribe. President Jonathan Nez signed the bill into law on Saturday. It prohibits commercial tobacco use, such as cigarettes, e-cigarettes, and smokeless tobacco products in enclosed and indoor workplaces and public areas on the reservation. The law does not restrict use in private residences or for ceremonial or cultural purposes. For more than a decade, advocates with the Air is Life Coalition have worked on public education and collaborated on the bill. The infrastructure package sent to President Biden includes resources for tribal communities, funding for federal programs in Native communities to address water and sanitation, transportation, broadband, energy, water settlements, mine and well cleanup, and other investments. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
There are now booster recommendations for all three available COVID-19 vaccines in the United States, and you may choose which booster shot you receive. More info at aaip.org or cdc.gov/coronavirus, who support this show.
Support by Ramona Farms, offering wholesome and delicious foods from our heirloom crops as our contribution to a better diet for the benefit of all people. We are honored to share our centuries-old farming and culinary traditions online at ramonafarms.com.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Brett Mabee. Corrections officials know that prison inmates who establish spiritual and cultural connections while serving time have a better chance of successfully re-entering society once they're released. However, at the same time, it's often a fight to get prison administrators to recognize Native traditions as even being valid. HOI is a Native nonprofit in Washington State dedicated to defending Native prisoners' rights to religious activities. They also work with local tribes and other agencies to prepare Native inmates to succeed once they're out from behind bars. The organization just received a $50,000 grant to promote the well-being of Native inmates. Coming up, we'll talk with HOI advocates about the work they do and how helping Native inmates has a broad benefit to the public. And don't forget, you're always welcome to join our conversation, too. What do you know about the benefits for helping Native people behind bars? What kind of Native-centered reentry programs are in your Native community? We're at 1-800-996-2848. Once again, that's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Joining us on the line today, right now, from Seattle, Washington, is Gabe Galanda. He's the HOI chairman and managing lawyer at the Galanda Broadband. He's a member of the Round Valley Indian Tribes. And welcome back to Native America Calling, Gabe.
Good morning. It's great to be back.
It's an honor to be able to catch up with you today. Later on, we'll bring Michael Hoover, chairman of Stonebridge Reentry Services, on the line. I do want to take this quick opportunity to say good day to you as well, Michael. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Gabe, as I was mentioning, we'll start with you. If you could, please just once again reiterate for the new listener out there what exactly it is that HOI does.
Well, HOI is a Coast Salish word spelled H-U-Y that means see you again, we never say goodbye. And we believe that's a fitting moniker for the work we do to ensure that our relatives who find themselves in state iron houses are afforded the opportunity to rehabilitate themselves through traditional religious and spiritual opportunities, such as sweat lodge, drum circle, and other opportunity for individual and group prayer. We've been at this work now for about 11 years, and we're excited about the work because it's necessary. As you said in your opener, the opportunity to pray and worship is the best way we believe our relatives can heal from the mistakes they've made, and it's the best way for them to prepare themselves to come back home, which is our goal, is to eventually get them back where they belong in the welcome arms and hands of their tribal communities.
And on a broader level, now as we talk about how this specifically relates to incarcerated members of our society, what kind of religious rights do prisoners have when they're incarcerated?
Well, they have rights guaranteed to them under the United States Constitution, meaning the First Amendment, and a federal law that specifically addresses religious worship, be you of Western faith or non-Western faith, in the prison or jail setting. But consistent with those federal laws and federal law like the American Indian Religious Freedoms Act of 1978, and of course, indigenous laws, our relatives have the right to engage in spiritual and religious expression through sweat lodge, through drumming, even through activities such as powwow. And it's our charge to make sure that they have those opportunities, because when you speak to our relatives, and you speak of religious freedom, that's the feeling that they have when they're allowed to worship as Indigenous peoples. It's the only freedom that they feel. But freedom is the word that they will tell you is their feeling and their state of mind when they're in that mode.
And taking that a step further, for the non-Indigenous listener out there today, what are some of the base ways that Indigenous worship differs from the Judeo-Christian beliefs?
Well, that's a tough nut to crack on a radio show. But generally speaking, looking at Sweat Lodge, for example, you know, that's an opportunity where prayers can be sent up to whoever the deity is, creator or grandfather, through the smoke that emits from the lodge ceremony. And for the non-Indian listener, river rocks are heated in a very hot fire. Those are called elders. They're then taken into a small lodge facility, which is typically erected with willow branches, and there's burlap or other materials placed over the top of the willow branches to create basically like a sauna-type environment. Those rocks, once they go into the Anipi, remain scalding hot from the fire that they were in outside of the Anipi, and it's at that time when water is poured over them, medicines such as sage or sweetgrass are placed on them, and steam and smoke emits and goes up to grandfather or creator along with the prayers that our relatives are saying within that lodge. So I would just offer that as an example, juxtaposed with, for example, what you might see in a Catholic church in the form of mass with holy water and communion and things like that. It's a different way of worship, but it's just as important, if not more important, than any other Western faith.
Absolutely. With that being said, what are some of the specific challenges that Native prisoners still face in regards to their religious rights?
Well, the biggest challenge in general is that we are over-incarcerated as a people or peoples. In Washington State, for example, we are 1% of the state's population, but 6% of the population in the Washington State Department of Corrections and its 12 prisons. An even more glaring statistic is within 36 months of our relatives' release from those prisons, 45% of them go right back into the system or into the state iron house. So that is the overarching challenge to what we do. Within the religious context, it's a challenge to ensure that every person of a multi-thousand person state agency like the Department of Corrections, from the secretary all the way down to the janitor, understands the need for religious worship, especially when they are predominantly white, Christian, and as we've learned through the pandemic, conservative, even right-wing ideologue in some respect. There is generally a misunderstanding or a misapprehension or even ignorance about Indigenous peoples in general or ways of life, and in particular, religion. And so we have had situations where people stand in the way of our relatives being allowed to worship, or they disrespect the process or person, or they're otherwise not doing everything in their power to allow our relatives the opportunity to heal themselves spiritually. And that is just a perennial challenge with any state correction system, be in the state of Washington or elsewhere in the United States. And that's one that we just continue to stand watch and guard against, and when necessary, fight against.
That high rate of recidivism, I know I said that wrong, recidivism is certainly a canary in the coal mine, if you will. And that points to the need to better equip the Indigenous inmate to re-enter the world. And there enters the work that Hoyt is about. And you mentioned being about this work for approximately 11 years now. Has the situation gotten any better since you started this work back in 2010?
In general, yes, but it has certainly ebbed and flowed. In 2010, a high-ranking religious official at the Department of Corrections, a Christian white man, basically took a pen to a piece of paper that was a matrix of religious activity and struck through all Indigenous religious opportunities. And in 2010, there were no longer the opportunity to worship. We restored that with the leadership of Washington tribes, including Yakima Nation, by 2011. And that's largely been left intact since then for the last 10 years. But I was warned by a longtime brother of our relatives, Francis Kaluuya, a Kalispell elder who's been doing this work for decades. And he's told me at that time, it's wonderful that everything is back and restored, but it's just a question of time until it gets taken back again, and we'll have to fight to restore it again. And we haven't seen anything as dramatic as we saw in 2010 in the last 11 years, but COVID did sort of make us recall that moment, because COVID itself sort of caused our relatives' opportunities to be taken away. They, for the better part of 17 or 18 months, while not seeing any human in the flesh, meaning any relative as kin or otherwise, they were also not allowed to congregate as a group in Sweat Lodge or in drumming or to smudge or pray together. And so imagine being on the inside when all hell has broken loose on the outside for the better part of a year and a half, and you can't see your family or any other one you love. And on top of that, you cannot congregate as a group to pray through that trauma, to pray through that grief, to pray through that fear that your family's living on the outside and that you're afraid is happening to them. There was no way for them to cope. And so we worked very hard, especially this year, to get those ceremonies back online and back in place so those relatives have a chance to pray through all the trauma that everyone else has been experiencing on the outside for the last 20 months.
It certainly seems like an important point to bring up, that I think a lot of the conversation misses, anyway, when it relates to COVID as a whole, is that obviously it doesn't make any of the pre-existing problems go away. It just exacerbates everything, and it really makes it difficult to be able to monitor the situation to ensure that people aren't falling through the cracks. But I guess the Department of Corrections up in Washington State has addressed that need as well, yes?
Yeah, we're really happy. I mean, we had some very difficult moments earlier this year. We were writing letters with the American Civil Liberties Union in Washington. Tribes were writing letters saying, it's time to get our relatives back in lodge, back in the circle. They need to smudge again. And there was a reluctance for health and safety reasons. But we rolled up our sleeves. We had very difficult conversation with the powers that be. And we're thankful that since August, our relatives are back where they belong, able to pray again together.
Gabe, I think that provides a great break point in our conversation. And don't forget, if you'd like to join our discussion today, we want to hear from you. Call in at 1-800-996-2848. I'm Brett Mabee, and you're Were you taught the Lenape tribe sold Manhattan Island to Europeans for just $24 in beads? A new exhibition and lesson plan from the National Museum of the American Indian challenges the conventional wisdom of Native history written from a non-Native viewpoint. We'll learn more about it on the next Native America Calling.
I feel happier when my children and grandchildren spend time with me or someone comes to visit. We also need to stay active to keep our spirits alive. As elders, our teachings are needed more than ever. The more we're socially connected with family and community, the less health problems we'll have, the longer we'll live. Remember, you're not alone. Connected together, we'll stand strong. More on elder isolation and caregiver resources at connectedindigenouselders.org. The National Indian Council on Aging supports this show.
You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Brett Mabee. Today, we're talking about a program that helps Native inmates with legal access to ceremony, as well as supporting education and vocational opportunities. You're welcome to join our conversation by calling 1-800-996-2848. That's also 1-800-99-NATIVE. If you're just now tuning in, I've been having a discussion with Gabe Galanda, who is the chairman and managing lawyer with Galanda Broadman. They help prisoners not only on the inside, but to help them re-enter society and to make sure that they don't get back into the correction system. With that being said, before bringing on our next guest, I do want to just kind of wrap up what we were talking about, Gabe, before the break. And we were mentioning that there has been an ebb and flow since you've been about this work, especially since 2010. COVID has obviously added quite a bit of another unexpected challenge in this process. However, you did mention that recently the Washington State Department of Corrections has addressed this, and they have recommitted to making these services available for inmates again, correct?
Yeah, and exciting. We're just not talking about getting our relatives back in lodge or group worship. We're doing some really innovative things with the Department of Corrections, such as in all 12 prisons in Washington State, there will now be sacred medicine gardens planted, meaning depending on the climate in eastern or western Washington, there will be sacred space set aside for medicines to be planted and harvested by our relatives before they're used in prayer. That could be lavender, sweetgrass, or other plants and medicines. And in this sort of era of land back, just think of the power of these lands, and they're very small in terms of size, but the power of these beautiful lands with these beautiful medicines and plants existing within the industrial confines of 12 prisons in the state of Washington. Just the power that emanates from that is sort of beyond description. In addition, all the lodges in the state are now being rebuilt because they've sort of taken a toll given inclement weather. And while our relatives were not able to use them, the state committed, well, we're going to get them ready for them to return to them. So there's just been a lot of really innovative work done to make sure that things are even better than they were before COVID, and certainly better than they've been since COVID for our relatives. And now we have this $50,000 grant from Coordinated Care, and we are excited to take all of that work to the next level in 2022 and beyond.
What is the significance of that Coordinated Care grant, and what are you going to do with the money?
We don't know yet, but I just want to tip my hat to Coordinated Care. They're a health insurance organization that is looking for innovative ways to keep indigenous communities healthy. And they saw the work we're doing in particular with these medicines and saw it as aligning with what they're trying to do more broadly to get our relatives healthier and keep them healthy, especially in the context of reentry. So we don't yet know what we'll do with the $50,000, but it will just be more of the great work we've done. And we intend to sort of ask the community and our relatives in the Iron Houses, what do they need? And how can we put those monies to use in helping meet those needs?
I can't thank you enough for your expertise and your insight into this very sensitive topic, Gabe. And we'll come back to you in just a few. I figured right now this is a good opportunity to bring our next guest onto the air at this time. Joining us from Clarkston, Washington, is Michael Hoover. He's the chairman of Stonebridge Reentry Services, and he's Lumbee. Welcome to Native America Calling, Michael.
Good morning, Brett.
I certainly appreciate you taking a little bit of time to join our conversation today. Let's give listeners out there a little bit of an understanding of who you are. How did you first get in touch with the services at Hoyt?
Well, I was incarcerated in 2006. For a string of robberies that I committed. I used to be drug affected and alcoholic, pretty much lost to the world. I came into the prison. I was braced by my brothers with the Native American circle. I got really involved in our circle. And we had a really good community, and we went out to lodge a lot. We had drumming, talking circles. We taught each other and learned from each other. And then, like Gabe was talking about, in 2010, there came this really pervasive policy that kind of struck all that out. And it kind of injured our ability to have gatherings with our families. And it just kind of, I don't know, put a wedge between the circle and the prison itself. And when Hoyt came in, they collaborated with all the tribes, and they reminded the state of the treaty rights that we had, and they were able to fix all of that. And we went through a period of, I guess, growing pains, because with the new policy, they were thinking that this is the way it's going to be. So it was a kind of a learning curve for the officers and stuff. But throughout time, we were able to have more gatherings. They became stronger. More people were invited. There was a lot of unity. And Hoyt, we owe Hoyt a great debt of gratitude for coming in and doing that for us, because without it, the brothers would have had to try and fumble through the legal maze of trying to figure out how to reinforce their rights, which could take a long time. Gabe talked about it. It's a perennial issue where you have a little bit of pushback from staff or maybe a certain prison when it comes to Native rights. And it's because they don't understand our ways, and they don't understand the way that we respect the land, the way that we respect our lodge. But I think overall that they've done a good job of bringing it back. Unfortunately for COVID, though, that really put a stop on everything. And a lot of the brothers that are in there, they depend on that lodge. They depend on that unity, that sense of community to be able to heal and have their journey on the red road. And when you stop all of that, those brothers are isolated. They don't get to communicate with each other. They don't get to smudge. They don't get to hold pipe ceremonies. They're unable to go to lodge. And it's really destructive. I remember going to meals, and I would see certain brothers on the way, and they'd be like, "Oh, Hoover, what's up, bro? Are you good? Is everything all right over there?" And I'd be like, "Yeah, how are you?" And they're like, "Man, we're struggling." But they would ask if they could pray for somebody. They wanted to pray for someone in my family or our community. They always thought about the other brother, and that's something that they learned being a part of our circle was community, you know? And that always struck me, is that our brothers put other people first, and they put the community first. They don't ask for prayers for themselves.
Michael, it certainly sounds like you owe a great debt of gratitude to the services that have been offered by Hoyt. And in fact, it seems to me that after successfully reentering after your stint, that you have put that work back into the community. You've built on that foundation. I was wondering if you could tell people a little bit about what Stonebridge Reentry Services is all about. What is reentry?
Yeah, first of all, I'd like to give a shout out to Hoyt and Gabe, because they kind of like, well, first of all, they wrote a letter of support for me for my clemency, which had a powerful impact on the governor's decision to give me clemency. That support was so powerful, and it really helped me out. As far as like advocating, I was a pipe carrier in the circle for a bunch of years, and I advocated, right? And I came from a perspective of fight, fight, fight. These guys are trying to take our rides. These guys are taking our lodge time, our tobacco. And it was Gabe that kind of tempered that in me and said, there's another way to advocate for your people. And that's, you know, honey is sweeter than vinegar, and you got to use that diplomacy. And I took that to heart. And since I've been released, I started Stonebridge Reentry Services. Well, my wife and I did. And that is going to be a reentry program that offers substance use disorder treatment in-house, a connection to services, the White Bison Wellbriety Program. It's something that I feel that people who have a sense of community, they're not going to do wrong. If you feel like you belong to your tribe, you're not going to injure your tribe. So part of our model is that when you come out, you have a place to land, you have a place to live, you have food, you do community service, and I'm not talking about putting on a orange vest and going and picking up garbage alongside the highway, but we're talking about going to animal shelters, donating your time, going to grocery stores, picking up dented cans and delivering those to food pantries. And the idea is that the more these bros and these people who are coming out into our community do that stuff, and they see the community, sees them as part of the community and not on the fringes, that they're going to want to do better. And we also have a program that's going to give family reunification, which is critical, I think, in reentry. If you feel like your family is rooting for you, you're going to stay the course. You don't want to let them down. A lot of these people who go to prison, they burn their bridges. They were isolated because they were drug affected. They didn't want to be around their families. This is a way to heal that and bring it back to center. And to once you got your family involved and your community involved, you got a good job, you have a place to launch from, I believe that that is going to reduce recidivism considerably. And I owe a lot of that to Hoyt.
Michael, your insight is certainly very appreciated right now. I think this overarching theme of community and putting things back into the whole is so essential. And I hope to continue on that particular train of thought before our time is up today, because, you know, we also need to help families be more supportive as well. And that education goes beyond just the inmates as well. So we'll come back to you in just a few. What kind of support do you think is needed for Native people behind bars? You're welcome to join our conversation by giving us a call at 1-800-996-2848. That's 1-800-99-NATIVE. We are going to go to the line right now. Joining our conversation is Donald, who's calling from Carson, New Mexico, listening in on KUNM. A good day to you, Donald. How are you doing today? And welcome to Native America Calling.
Good morning. I feel good this morning, you know, listening to what's going on. Took me back to 1975 up at Leavenworth Federal Penitentiary, where I culture coordinated everyone back then. And I seen a lot. I seen the group get together with a pipe, and they were gathering more and more as I went there every month, Saturday morning, early. But, you know, getting there, I bring them in all the culture news and everything, and being of Native American, you know, church background, you know, I bring in some of them who, you know, missed that. I brought in everything. And one morning I showed up, and it was just the guy, the main guy that, you know, brought me there. Well, he was the only one there. And I said, "Where's everybody else?" He said, "Well, they're all visiting." I said, "Who they visiting?" He said, "Women. We never had women visitors, but now we have, you know." And this all happened because of the pipe. The pipe was missing from the cell. Everything else was intact, but the pipe. And it seemed to me like they didn't want, you know, the Native brothers together. And then what I learned, you know, shouldn't even really be there, you know, just because of their political, you know, expressions or whatever. But so this sort of reminded me of that, but I've always followed it, you know, from then on, losing my 17-year-old son in eastern Oklahoma, you know, he was murdered because of, you know, the color of his skin, but he wrote the license tag, you know, and it may be to really see what's going on with our youth, you know, here in America. So I dedicate my life to work, you know, with youth. I'm a retired youth worker now, and I've been in residentials and incarcerated, you know. But what I noticed with the incarcerated ones, you know, they'd always want me to smudge. Or I said, "Well, if you step up your level, you know, I can take you out, three of you, and, you know, smudge. You know, smudge you off, you know." And but a lot of them would have nightmares and dreams, and some would, you know, they would think they're schizophrenic or something, but they would tell me they would be visited by ancestors. And later on, as I ran into some of them later on, as they become adults, they're all like spiritual leaders. They're doing these ceremonies, and then I do vision quests. And you have to be alone. You have to sacrifice. You have to give without. And then I thought, well, God, you know, we're not neglected. You know, the Great Spirit is still with us, even wherever you're at, you know, even overseas in a foxhole fighting a war or wherever, you know, he's everywhere. That's how his Native Americans pray. And for it to be rekindled, you know, from there, it only gives power, because that's where it's at, you know. Wherever they are and they're doing that, they regain power. And I just want to say that and continue to support and know that there's people there. Even me, I'm gaining power. I got some rabbits here where I are that showed up, and they're unusual. And I looked it up, and the Kiowas have a rabbit society.
Thank you so much for your comments today, Donald. And I want to pass it back over to Michael at this time. Michael, hearing some of Donald's experiences working as a cultural coordinator and hearing some of his recollections back in 1975, how vital is it that this reconnection happens? How did it help you in your process?
It's critical. A lot of the men that come to prison, they experience trauma in their childhood. In order to heal that trauma, they have to go back to center. The only way to go back to center is through the medicines. And the only way that you can become a whole human being to re-enter society again is if you deal with that trauma and do it in a ceremonial, traditional way. That's what I believe. I experienced my own trauma. I know that probably 95% of the bros that I worked with experienced trauma on some level, some of it extreme, some of it not as extreme, but they don't deal with the trauma, and it causes them to be drug affected, to use alcohol, to use those black medicines, and they don't get on that red road until they come to prison. They might have an elder who's on the red road or tries to push them to go to Native American church or sweat lodge or to smudge down, but they don't get that until they come to prison because it slows you down. I think that if we can heal people from their trauma, that's the best way to stop recidivism. And it's critical that DOC recognizes that the Red Road and Sweat Lodge and culture is the way that we heal our brothers and sisters, and that they should not interfere with it, that they should grow these programs, not hamstring them. And that's what I believe.
I agree 100%. We'll be back to wrap up our conversation in just a few. And don't forget, we want to hear from you, so give us a call at 1-800-996-2848. I'm Brett Mabee, and you're listening to Native America Calling.
I deha la y ganto ni dagals tanisi sa'i. A seno, laski yul stoti yigi, hi yela nu dana dega I. Dals tu isi. Di dan eteti, de zedo wito huelo di. Witala no heta ni ewe a yele nu dan adega an access diski, naski yiged stela, at healthcare.gov, ale 1-800-318-2596. He a get to no se Medicare, ale Medicaid unadalka I.
Thank you for tuning in to Native America Calling. I'm Brett Mabee. Today we're learning about ways that help society to focus on improving Native prisoners' access to things like religious ceremonies and education. There's still time to join our conversation. We're at 1-800-996-2848. Once again, that's 1-800-99-NATIVE. Right now we're going to go over to the phone lines and welcome Marcy to our conversation today. She's listening in from Albuquerque, New Mexico, listening on KUNM. Good day to you, Marcy. How are you doing today?
Great. Thank you so much. My question was, I personally see religion as a tool of imperialism that, you know, has come to this country and been used as a tool to take control of people and land. And so as a non-Native or
Marcy, we're having technical difficulties with your phone line. It is my understanding that your question is you want to know how non-Natives can help attend Native ceremonies, or if Natives are open to help from non-Natives. I wanted to throw that question over to Gabe. Gabe, on behalf of Marcy, who I think we unfortunately lost our connection with, how open are Native prisoners to non-Natives helping out?
I mean, Michael may be able to answer that better than I, but they generally accept any hand that is offered to them in a good way. And so, at least to me, it doesn't matter whether you're indigenous or non-indigenous. If you're committed to spiritual expression and freedom as a mode of rehabilitation and a mode of preventing recidivism and a mode of facilitating successful reentry by our relatives back home, then I'm confident they would welcome the support For example, my office manager is non-Indigenous, and she writes all the grants for Hoyt and administers the nonprofit. And to my knowledge, all the brothers and sisters who've come into contact with her and with me are grateful for her help. But the other thing the caller alluded to is the mode of Christianity and how it has advanced colonization of Indigenous peoples in America. And, of course, that dates back to the Papal Bulls and the Doctrine of Discovery and the basic foundations of this country. But we still deal with that legacy. So, for example, we recently had a law change in the state of Washington that would require predominantly white, male, straight, Christian men who oversee spiritual practice by our relatives and have historically been called chaplains. We've had the law changed to cause a more neutral term to describe them and what they do, which is religious coordinator, which may sound to some like political correctness at its, you know, nth degree. But fundamentally, when you have somebody self-identifying as a chaplain, it subjugates those who do not practice Christian faith. It suggests supremacy rather than equality. And so even in the language of corrections, we have sought to reform things so that this colonial Christian legacy does not subjugate our relatives when they seek to pray in traditional Indigenous ways.
The disentanglement from this colonial legacy is so vital for the Indigenous inmate to, as you were describing, as both you and Michael were describing, to feel that sense of wholeness again, especially when we understand how vital that education is, not just for the Indigenous population, but for everybody at large. So I certainly appreciate your insights on that, Gabe. And I do understand we have another caller. It was Melvin joining us from Santee, Nebraska, listening in on KZYK. How's it going today, Melvin?
It's going all right. I just got moved into my new apartment down here at Santee. My house burned up on Halloween. I was in the hospital. But what I want to say, you know, I was in the South Dakota State Penitentiary in 2001. When I got there, I seen some of the boys. I asked them what was happening, and they said they had lodge coming up, but all the Indian boys had to use their commissary coins to buy wood, sage. We had to buy it ourselves because the warden and the governor said there's separation of church and state. So at the time, my good friend, was running Angelina Jolie's foundation. And we put a grant into her, and they funded it to buy all the wood and rock and everything for the penitentiary. Bill for 5 years. And what happened was we got the funding for the program, and then the state said, no, you got to fund all six prisons. So she said, okay. So she funded it to buy rock, wood, sage, cedar, all that, for the prisoners there in the state of South Dakota. And I was discharged not long after that. And I don't know if there's been any follow-up, but that was a big problem. They made us guys pay for our own wood, rocks, and all that out of our commissary. The state did, but Angeline helped us out. But the other thing with your release, reentry program that you're going, which is sounds like a great program, because what happens to most of us is we're released right back to the same situation. And the reason for that is because there's a critical housing shortage in Indian country. So we always end up at the same place. that we need to maybe get a prison program going where some of them have a lot of skills. I recommend that they start their own carpentry crew and start building some houses. You know, we can find material for that. But good luck on your program. It's needed. You know, when I was in there, a lot of the new guys, younger fellas, because I was almost 50 when I went, didn't know anything. By the time I got out, they were singing. They learned how to sing. They were going to lodge all the time. And I was so glad that we had wood and rock just for them guys. Otherwise, they probably wouldn't have been able to be exposed to it like that every week. And our lodge there held 40 guys. So we had a big lodge. But, okay, good luck, you guys. And hope maybe you can add.
Thank you so much for your comments today, Melvin, and for joining our conversation today. As you were highlighting, Melvin, it is so important to be equipped with the tools for improving chances of success on the outside. Gabe, what are some ways that people can reduce that rate of recidivism?
Well, this really falls to our tribes and our tribal communities. And candidly, you know, there's so much unmet need in Indian country that this has not become a priority yet. And that is part of the reason why in Washington State, 45% of our relatives go back into iron houses within 36 months of their release. So to any tribal leaders out there listening, it's very important that you join us in this work. We need our tribal communities to make resources available to our relatives when they come back home, or as our relative just said, they're going to fall into the exact same cycle of trauma and dependency and addiction that got them incarcerated to begin with. Otherwise, I would just encourage people who find their way out to reach out to people like Mike Hoover, who's a shining success story, to people like Winona Stevens, who runs Heal for Reentry out of Tacoma, Washington, and also runs the Iron House Medicine Program. She actually oversees our contractors who go into the prisons and facilitate worship for our relatives and with our relatives. There are resources out there. They just need to be sought and obtained, but there are not nearly enough resources to satisfy the need that our relatives have when they come home, and that's on all of us to try to meet that need.
You're 100% on the mark that we all need to step up our efforts a little bit and to remind our relations that we are there for them as well. And, you know, I'm also thinking of ways that I can step up my game a little bit as I'm listening to you and Michael talk about this essential need for family to be supportive as well. At this time, I also want to bring Timothy from White River, Arizona, listening in on KNNB to the conversation. He found his religion on the inside. Welcome to Native America Calling, Timothy.
Hello.
It's my understanding that you found your spiritual side while you were incarcerated as well, correct?
Yes, I had found my religion in there when I first went in, I didn't believe, and then I found a lot of brothers that were really into it. Like, they would take me to the sweat, they would have me join them, they would encourage me, bring me back up, uplift me from what I was waiting for, and I was feeling down because of the things I've done. They uplifted me, and from when I got there, everything was pretty much set because we used to have the natives from the Navajo Nation and the Apache Nation would donate wood and rocks and stuff for them. And it was pretty interesting about how they went about it and how they never gave up on themselves. But, you know, all the brothers, the young brothers, I would watch them tie their drums. I would watch them tie everything of, like, how they would get ready to start our sweat. It would smudge us and everything. We'd just get in the sweat. One person leave, we have to start all over, like, you know, sing another four songs. You know, there was different There was Blackfoot, there was Montana tribes, there was people from all over the United States that I was locked up with. And I spent like 7.5 years with these brothers. So it taught me a lot from my religion to different types of religion, but they all fall into one nation, you know, one tribe. We all believed in everything. When I got out was when I didn't get released back to my country, I had gotten released in Phoenix, so I stayed away from the tribe because there was really nothing that I could turn to because of my charges and stuff. But there's a lot of things that I wish the tribe could help us with, because it's kind of hard for us guys as Native Americans that are charged with serious charges to get jobs and stuff. And you know, our religion is still there. I'm still carrying my religion, and it's always going to be there. But there's a lot of brothers in there that are real young that they know a lot and have a good understanding about it. Some of them were like 18, and they amazed me because they knew a lot of things, you know. And they said they had learned from their grandparents, their grandpa, or, you know, their elders. They do carry it in there. A lot of them teach you a lot of things, and I've learned a lot in there. And you know, it's just get out is just the problem that we have, is to face the reality that we have to go back to.
Absolutely, Timothy. I can't thank you enough for sharing your experiences, and especially highlighting the need to stand together, to lift each other up as well. We're fastly running out of time. I just want to pass it back to Gabe one last time. If I could ask you one thing, why is this kind of work with Native prisoners so important to you?
Well, both of my parents were down. They're no longer with me, but my dad was down at the Walla Walla State Penitentiary when my mom was pregnant with me. And then literally as I graduated law school, my mom was down in the Washington Correction Center for Women. And I just have to believe that had opportunities like this presented themselves to them, they may have had a better walk in life once they got out of the state iron houses that they found themselves in during those sort of bookend moments in my particular life. But I also want to just recognize, as Brian Clattersby, who sits on our board, recognizes, some of the decisions our relatives make date back to when they were in the womb, meaning suffering from fetal alcohol syndrome and ultimately unable to decipher right from wrong. So we're undoing a lot of trauma that goes back before our relatives even found themselves on this earth. And we just have to recognize that when they make mistakes. And we're trying to give them a chance to heal from those mistakes and move forward. And in closing, I just want to recognize people like Lenny Foster of Navajo Nation and ancestor Jana McLeod of the Nisqually people, who have done this work for decades and decades and decades, and upon whose shoulders we stand today in this advocacy.
Thank you so much for your tireless dedication to this vital work, Gabe. Once again, he is the chairman and managing lawyer with Galanda Broadman. I also want to thank our other guest, Michael Hoover, the chairman of Stonebridge Reentry Services from the Lumbee Nation. And thank you for all our calls today as well. That insight is so needed. The more voices that we can bring into this conversation, the more insight and understanding and the better equipped we will be to help raise each other up as well. We've officially reached the end of the hour. Once again, I'd like to say thank you to our guest, Gabe Galanda and Michael Hoover. Be sure to join us tomorrow for a discussion about a Native-made school lesson in conjunction with an exhibit at the Smithsonian's National Museum of the American Indian that aims to counter European-centric teachings about Native people in New York. I'm Brett Mabee, and we'll hear from you then.
Ah, chess skull halt. Chachesets quiluislu in quilquiltin, pentams quiluislu on in crispiotin, atskent luetiaslu in crispiotin, chashit, centuio yastwin in u, chasquasus upenhesh zeal. Squokal tausent lu on skelliuk suchmariem yet sachem quilnecht smeet. Chquimet healthcare.gov, uquach quilquil tausent 1-800-318-2596. Yes, mamit in Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services.
Support by VisionMaker Media, presenting Community, Returning Home Through Togetherness, an online event and panel discussion commemorating Native Americans and Alaska Native veterans. Available for streaming 24-7, November 1st through the 24th. Native Americans and Alaska Natives are one of the most consistent demographics that risk their lives for a government that tried to eradicate them. Returning Home Through Togetherness is open to the public for online streaming with no charge at visionmakermedia.org as part of VisionMaker Media's 45th anniversary.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.